Ladies and gentlemen, live from the Eagle's Nest, here is Joe Madison.
We're going to take a break from the Ben Carson. Caron Butler, and you know, I'm reading the bio, and we were laughing because he said, James, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. And we laugh because we hear our first name, and it's like, James? You know, then your ears perk up.
Stand up straight quick.
You stand up real straight. First of all, thank you for coming in. And I really want to get right to the book, Tough Juice. We were talking because I spent a couple of years in your neighborhood, Racine, Whitewater, Wisconsin. Yeah. And this was, of course, during the late 60s. Man, it was a rough place. You know? And General Motors town, General Motors moves out, people are unemployed. How much of that impacted your life growing up, even as a striving athlete?
I think for one, you know, once when a lot of opportunity leaves any place, you know, people scramble and, you know, they turn to different avenues for income and resources. And, you know, for the most part, you know, in our area, you know, they turned to negative avenues, and which resulted into, you know, a lot of crime.
But you obviously, I mean, you had two roads that you could choose.
Definitely.
When did, like, let's start with your athletic ability. I was giving a speech just this past weekend. I mean, you know, you're lucky. Becoming an NBA player is like one in a million. I mean, if you're a high school player, one in a million, may.
Yeah.
I've always said there are more black folk who work for NASA than play for the NBA. But so at what point did you know, or did people say to you, you know, you have the potential to go all the way?
I would have to say, and this is fast forward through a lot of stuff, but I would have to say after I got out of correctional facility. You know, when I got out of the correctional facility in 96, 97, I went to a tournament with some of the top players in the world.
How old were you?
I was 16 and a half, 17 years old.
And how did you end up going into the correctional facility?
Well, I got.
'Cause you write about it in your book, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I was arrested, you know, for, you know, cocaine and having a handgun on school grounds.
So let me start there. Then how is it that you got in that aspect? How did you choose that? What was going on in your life at that time?
I think it was just, you know, from the second I jumped off the porch, you know, in Racine, you know, I was surrounded by a lot of, you know, things that, you know, that I assumed was normal and was normal way of living. And that was the hustle. That was the street life. And, you know, it was something that I embraced.
Why did you embrace it?
I embraced it because I thought it was right. I thought it was, you know, okay. It was normal around those areas.
Was there a certain attraction to it?
I would have to say the flashy cars, the jewelry, the money, the aura just of being, you know, in the midst of all that.
And this was a time when there were a lot of draconian rules, laws. I mean, if you got busted with cocaine, be it crack or a gun, you were going to jail. I mean, there was no ifs, ands, buts about it.
No doubt.
You didn't have any option. It wasn't that, the military or whatever. You weren't asked to go into rehab.
Nah, wasn't no programs in place. You know, you was, if you got caught, you was going to jail.
And then you come out, you're 16, and someone recognizes you've got talent. Obviously, the size, the talent. And you now are in. You're now sent to a camp.
Yeah, I had a brother by the name of Jamil Laguari that ran a program out of the Bray Center.
And this was in Racine.
In Racine, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And they had a traveling AAU team sponsored by Nike, and he was like, "Man, you got nice size. You should come with us on this trip." And he took me on this trip, and I go to I think it was Georgia. To the Peach Jam, and I go out there and perform at a high level against the top players in the country at the time. You know, fresh off, you know, fresh out of the correctional facility, and I made a name for myself. And from that second on, you know, I was just like, man, I can do this, you know, because I felt comfortable about, you know, finding my niche finally.
But what did you pick up anything inside the juvenile facility that may have changed your attitude? I mean, your attitude couldn't have changed on the court.
No, I think a lot of things changed inside the facility, you know, my thought process, you know, losing friends and stuff like that. When I was placed out of my environment and placed in corrections, you know, while I was in there, you know, friends had died. My mom had moved out the old neighborhood, you know, to give me a kind of a fresh start when I returned home, so I wouldn't be accustomed to doing the things that I was normally accustomed to. I would be surrounded by different people and things like that. And, you know, I've been through so much adversity at an early age. So the second I was in corrections, you know, I learned a lot about myself, you know, how to, you know, think before I react. You know, that's something that I should have learned at a super early age, but I wasn't thinking of the consequences of things that I would do, you know, and what who it would hurt. It would hurt me, it would hurt my family, all those things.
We often hear, and people might be listening, we're talking to Caron Butler, as all of you know, just an outstanding player, Big East co-player of the year at University of Connecticut, 10th overall pick, I think it was 2002, with the and Dallas Maverick and their championship season in 2011. People would probably hear you say, "Yeah, no." So where was your father's? Was your problem a lack of not having a male influence? So when you hear these arguments, how do you discuss it in your book? Was it a factor or not a factor? How do you discuss it in the book?
The way I grew up was, you know, my mom worked two jobs. She worked relentlessly, and you know, the shifts that she wasn't working, she was sleeping. And I did not have a father in my life. My grandmother had filled that void for so many years.
Yeah, I was reared by grandparents. Yeah,
my grandmother was, you know, extremely hands-on. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the male role models, my mother, two brothers,
okay,
they was in the streets as well. Mm-hmm. And they was in and out of corrections and going through different things in their life, and that's what I saw.
How does unemployment play a role? Because I know about Racine, I know about how those jobs dried up, and we talked earlier. And does it play a role? Because some people will say, "Well, that's just an excuse."
I think it's like it's a gamble. You look at certain situations, and if you already have a kid, or if you already, you know, have a circumstance that you're dealing with, you know, can this job or this job that I'm boxed in because of my education or because of my priors or anything, this is what I'm slotted in to make, and I can't get past this point. And I thought that played a role in the development and what my uncles was able to do, you know, as far as, like, you know, getting a job and stuff like that. And once I got a mark on my resume, I felt the same way.
Does this mark on the resume that you talk about, your life, did the NBA overlook that? Did they talk to you about that? Because isn't all of this taken into consideration? Because Definitely. The NBA is a franchise. It's a brand.
It's a huge franchise.
And a brand.
Definitely.
And is this part of the discussion?
It always is. Like, The same way we're having this conversation now is the same way that, you know, when you're going through the draft process, mm-hmm. you have to meet with the organizations.
Really?
Yeah, and they ask you questions. They place you in scenarios. And
like, give me an example that you remember. And that maybe is in the book.
So I'm meeting with an organization, and they said, look, the question is not your ability on the court.
We know you can play basketball.
You play the game. Okay, you're exactly what we need and want.
All right.
But
always listen when you hear
but. But what would you do if you was to, embark on these millions of dollars and we invest and give you this huge contract, who would you have around you?
And they asked you those questions.
Yeah, you know, like you said, it's a huge investment, and they want to know these things and know that you have the right mindset moving forward. And you know, what would you do in this situation? You know, and what's expected of you in this situation? And you know, are you going to embrace it the way you should embrace it?
I wonder how much, and do you talk about this in the? I wonder how much Lynn Bias's situation played in the NBA taking that approach.
I think it probably did play somewhat of a huge role. I think a lot of positives and negatives that happened over the years with players, athletes, you know, kind of structured the way that they go about things now. You know, it's a lot of positives and it's a lot of negatives. You know, someone losing their life to, you know, something like Lynn did, and you know, it was unfortunate. So, you know, you have to protect the brand as much as possible.
I'm reading here about this school to prison pipeline, and you know, we ought to invite him to be part of that discussion. We're having a what we call American Conversations, and our first one is going to be on school to prison pipeline. You know, you got kids being, they make a mistake in school, and next thing you know, they're arresting, you know, these kids in school. But we only have a couple of minutes, but the book is a tough TUFF juice.
Yes.
So what is it in that you want young people to take away? Who is this book written for?
It's written for you guys. You know, for all the youth out there, anybody that need to be inspired, this book is for you. I'm inspiring people to, you know, be determined, be dedicated, be disciplined. I'm a strong believer in seeing is believing. You know, for many years, like, I had people that came in and tried to uplift me out of situations and talk to me, but I always felt like they didn't know my story because they didn't actually go through what I went through.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you really tell me what to do if you didn't actually walk that life? And I've been through it. I've been incarcerated. I've been through the struggle. And I don't want to use my platform just to ride around and drive around in nice cars and people glorify that. I want to use it to uplift people. And that's the reason why I did this. You know, and it's important for me to do this. And I've been had my hands on, like, a hands-on approach for many years, you know, in the locker room with the players that I've played with. Like, all this is from the heart.
Biggest challenge that a young person has today, whether they're NBA bound or not, biggest challenge in your opinion? I have 30 seconds, they're telling me.
The biggest challenge is, you know, I think it's one of them is just confidence, like, you know, self-esteem, like believing that you can accomplish something and staying goal oriented and having consistency in your life, you know. And once you acquire a goal or a set a goal and you attain it, you know, set a new goal.
Okay.
Keep moving forward.
Just keep moving forward.
Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, we get caught up in which, like, oh, yeah, I did that. Okay. Like, you got to continue to progress and continue to move forward.
Yeah, that's what I always tell folks. You can't keep looking in the rearview mirror and going forward.
Definitely.
I won't use the word James.
You got to be standing up straight again.
Thank you. Tough juice and please. And the forwards by Kobe Bryant.
Kobe, that's my big brother right there.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Good luck on it.
Thank you.
We'll put it on our Facebook.
Thank you.
You got it.